Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live alternate Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's 45-minute rescheduled episode, don't even ask me about that because I'll get really mad, is called Why Are You So Angry? It's about a timely issue I'll be discussing with my friend and colleague Meredith Richardson, a collaborative lawyer and conflict coach in New Hampshire and Maine. We'll be talking about the signs of healthy, normal anger versus unhealthy anger, different ways people manifest anger, as well as some tips for calming things down when they feel too heated. So anyway, hi, Meredith. How are you doing?
Hi, Susan. I'm doing well, and I'm actually a little surprised that it's actually working this time.
It's been a rough thing. We've had two false starts with this, and it's really been a test of our frustration tolerance and how we manage, how angry we get, how readily, and how we manage it, and whether we go into problem solving or not. But here we are. Hopefully the bugs are all fixed. I don't think I got my my music on the air. I don't think you heard it, did you?
I did not. I heard dead air.
Okay. All right, dead air. So little bugs we're trying to fix as we go along. But anyway, Meredith, I thought it might be a good idea for us to take questions as they come so that if people relate to a specific aspect of what we're talking about, while it's fresh in their mind, they can just dial 1 on their phone and be able to join us on the air with a question or comment. What do you think?
That sounds great.
Okay. All right. So if you have a question or a comment, just dial 1 and you'll be in line to join us on the air, callers out there. Now, this is a very, very timely subject, healthy anger versus unhealthy anger. Meredith, I thought it might be good for us to start with how we would define and describe healthy anger. Sound good to you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll share a few things, and why don't you share a few things? Healthy anger, from a psychotherapist perspective and from my perspective, is it's obviously an unpleasant emotion. Anger is not a pleasant thing to feel, but it is a normal response to a perceived threat, experiences of pain, frustration, or an experience of some kind of injustice. Wouldn't you say, Meredith?
I would agree with that. I mean, we do feel anger because we get triggered, and we're triggered because we are feeling like something's a threat. It's a powerful emotion, and I think that some people are afraid of the power that it conveys.
Yeah, the intensity around it really scares people. It is more intense. It's felt in the body. There's often, when it's manifested, there's a raised voice, a red face, excited gestures. And I think you're right. The intensity of the feeling and the way it manifests can be very, very threatening to people. But it involves voiced feelings of frustration, outrage, and insult. And it's a normal, healthy response to an experience of threat or some kind of experience of injustice or violation. The main thing that I want to say about healthy anger, Meredith, and I'm sure you see this a lot in your practice as a mediator, conflict coach, and collaborative lawyer, is that it's nonviolent. It's safe, and it's control, and it's in control. Healthy anger is not a violent expression.
I would agree with that, Susan. I mean, I think that healthy anger means that you're not doing harm to yourself or to others. And so you have to, when you talked about people feeling it in their body, you get your basic body feeling. So people will feel, you might feel your fists clench. Your body gets ready to fight. So you are feeling sort of muscles tense, People's faces will scrunch. You can feel your face scrunch a little bit. And all of that is normal. Your heart might beat a little faster because of it. It's what
yeah.
you do with it. And that's what we've talked about. And so as long as you are being safe, you know, safe with yourself and safe with others, there are plenty
okay.
of ways to let that anger out.
Yes. And safe is not only about not beating on somebody or not calling names, but, you know, I think it might be a good thing for us to go into what is safe in nonviolent, healthy anger. And one thing that I think stands out about healthy anger is that it involves I statements. It asks for attention, accountability, amends, or restitution. So when you are expressing anger in a healthy way, you're using I statements. You're saying things like, when you did that, I felt such and such. This is what I need for you, from you. So it's not you statements that are shaming and blaming and demeaning, but I statements asking for accountability, amends, or restitution. And part of what makes it safe, I think, is that it deals with present issues. It's not something that happened 20 years ago or something random. It's really present, more present issues. Wouldn't you
right.
say?
Right. I would refer, well, when you talk about the not things that happened in the past, I refer to that as the scattershot technique, you know, and it's throwing everything out there. So it's not just what you happen to do recently, but it's everything that you have done for the past months or years to irritate someone. That's not, it's just not fair fighting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in terms of the I statements, I would also, I guess, caution against that. You know, sometimes people take I statements and then turn them into you statements. So it should be an I statement without blaming or shaming, right? So I don't, you know, I think you're a jerk. Yes, you started the sentence with I. However you ended with you're a jerk. So it doesn't really count as the I statement that you're talking about.
Yes. Yes, it's I need this from you, or when you did this, I felt this, or, you know, this was the impact on me when you did such and such. So it's an I statement. It deals with present issues. And I think another thing that characterizes healthy anger is that it really, and this is a very central thing, is that it moves toward the other person. There's direct engagement with the person, you know, the other person, either in person, via mail, phone, or some form of electronic device. But essentially, it's an attempt to connect and to build understanding. It's not an attempt to demean or control or put somebody down. It's trying to make a connection.
I think that, I mean, that's a good distinction in terms of it not being about power and control. And so it is about, you know, expressing the anger, saying that I'm angry and this is why. But it's not about controlling the other person. It's about letting them know the impact
yeah.
that they've had.
Yeah, yeah. And in that sense, trying to build more understanding and connection. Do you understand the impact of your behavior on me, how it impacted me? Another thing that, speaking to what you just said, is it addresses behavior, not character. It's not a character assassination like you're a jerk or, you know, statements that would be a kind of decimation of somebody's character that really puts them down at the core. But it really, when you're expressing anger in a healthy way, you are talking about what somebody did, not who they are.
Exactly. And it is talking about the behavior and isolating that and not having the discussion be that you're a bad person because you did this. This is bad behavior. I don't like this behavior. But that doesn't
yeah.
mean, therefore, I don't like you.
Yes. Yeah, that's really a critical thing because what can somebody do in a productive way with something that feels like it is a character assassination? It's that is not an attempt to connect or build understanding. That's just an attempt to demean somebody.
The other person too. I mean, so if you get to that level that you're triggered enough that you're starting to do character assassination, then you're likely to trigger in the other person the same type of response. I mean, then you could trigger them into also acting in that capacity, and then so they, you know, their options could be fight, flight, or freeze. And so you could see that other person just completely shut down or just walk away and not want anything to do with the conversation anymore, or come back at you about your character so that it could get really ugly and heated.
Yeah. So essentially what you are doing in healthy anger is you're avoiding triggering the reptilian brain that only knows fight, flight, or freeze, because when that part of the brain is activated, everyone's in a very primitive, reactive state, and you don't want to go there. This is really about trying to make a connection, trying to build understanding, and trying to address behavior. Another thing that strikes me, Meredith, in my work, I see this a lot especially with couples, is that healthy anger seems, it's responsive to a situation or an experience. It's not random. It, as you say, you know, scattershot, where it just tries to deal with everything at once. It's not random, and it's not chronic. It's focused, and it's responsive to a particular situation. Do you see that in your work as a mediator?
I would say that as well. Sometimes I'll have people who do, they come and they have a list, and they want to talk about the whole list before the other person gets to talk. And I will want to slow things down and talk about them one at a time, because it's overwhelming to be on the other side of a whole list of things that you do that annoy the other person. So one at a time, please. One issue at a time.
I talk to couples about that a lot. Try to focus. And women are particularly guilty of this, where they will go through the whole laundry list of everything they've been angry about for the last 20 years. And I try to help people look at, if there is a connective thread between the examples that you're giving, then you're maybe talking about one thing. So maybe you're angry about your husband not giving you sufficient notice about being late, where you don't feel included in what's going on or considered. So instead of talking about 20 different examples, look for the connective thread, so you're essentially talking about one thing. Because as you said, people cannot process 20 things, and they cannot process something that feels like it's a scattershot.
Right. I would say, too, when you brought up that it's more of a woman thing. I think that sometimes, because in our society, women in particular are told, you know, don't be angry. That's not nice. You're not supposed to be angry if you're a woman. And so women will stuff their anger for a long time and not say anything, so that when they finally do get upset, they'll get upset over the last straw. You know, it's the straw that broke the camel's back, and then they explode. And really what they're upset about is not the one little thing that happened. It's because they've stuffed the last 20 things. And so it becomes a better communication piece. It's being more comfortable with, okay, I'm angry. This happened, and it upset me. And being able to have that talk in the moment, as opposed to waiting 3 months down the line until you're finally so aggravated because it's happened over and over and over again and you've never said anything about it.
Yes, built up with anger is generally very toxic, and that's why I think the whole issue of dealing with present issues as they arise is really important, because it's very hard for a partner to deal with cumulative anger, which smolders into deep resentment or bitterness or rage. That's what happens, and we'll talk about that when we get into unhealthy anger. But you're right; it deals with present issues as they arise, so that there isn't a toxic buildup. And one of the things that occurs to me about healthy anger is that it's usually fairly brief as a flare-up. and it ends in closure. It's not something that just goes on and on and on and becomes World War III.
And I would add to that, actually, I went to an interesting seminar recently where the doctor was talking about anger. It's just one more chemical being released in the body. And so it is supposed to be a brief thing. And the fact is, if you are stewing in this for a long time, that's because you keep re-triggering it. You keep triggering your brain to make that chemical. But it really should be a passing emotion.
Right, right. And that's another whole show. We could go into another whole show about what we say to ourselves to fuel anger and keep it alive and build it versus what we say to ourselves, what we do with it, and what we say to ourselves to contain it so that it's responsive to an immediate situation. I mean, we could do 5 shows on that one, our thoughts and our self-talk, but I think you're making a good point about how it activates, certain chemicals that really ramp up triggering and exacerbate the issue versus dealing with present issues. And then it's a release and there's closure. Now, Meredith, what I would like to do is just take, before we go into unhealthy anger, because we have a lot to say about that. We both know a lot about that. We see that in our work all the time. What I think might be a good idea would be to take just a brief little commercial break and to tell our listeners about an upcoming event that you and I and another person is going to be doing, an event that you're sponsoring at Star Island. I'm wondering if you want to say something about that.
Thank you. I would love to. So next month, June 21st to the 25th, Susan and I will be doing a couples retreat out at Star Island. We're also having Heather Brontes, a financial professional, join us out there for one of the days. So we're looking at 4 nights, basically almost 5 days, but 4 nights of working together on your relationship. We're looking to help you improve your communication, improve your connection, and decrease your conflict.
So it will be addressing, one of the things that will be addressing this retreat is what we're talking about tonight, how you can manage conflict in a way where you are using healthy communication. And if you are feeling angry about things, you are expressing it in ways that are productive, that move you toward better understanding and connection rather than World War III. That's a few of the things we're going to be dealing with in that retreat.
Going to come up more than once.
considering. Right. Absolutely. Star Island, for our listeners, is also just a lovely place where it's so easy to reflect and learn. I went to one of your retreats last summer, and it was just another thing entirely. You are surrounded by beauty, and it's very calming and soothing and very conducive to taking in new information and making changes in a very manageable way. So anybody who hasn't been on Star Island before, this is an ideal place to not only go for fun, but especially fun that's teamed up with learning new skills and learning, taking in new ideas. So
it really it gets you to that island atmosphere, without having to go very far. You know, so you take the boat out of Portsmouth; it takes an hour to get there, and then you're not easily accessible in terms of technology, your cell phone has limited service, your texting, you have limited abilities to text, and you have limited abilities to check your email. And so you really find yourself just settling in and relaxing and getting onto island time.
And you're really off the grid there. And I think when you're off the grid, you're more you're more receptive to new ideas. I know when I did your retreat last year, it was just like being in another place entirely, and I wished I had stayed for the whole thing. So Anybody who's interested should call Meredith, and that number is 207-439-4267, right?
That's it.
Okay. And if people want to use email and email Meredith, that would be meredithmediates@aol.com. Sound good?
That sounds good. Or they can also reach out to me. They can connect with me on my website, www.meredithmediates.com.
Okay, great. Now, let's get back to the issue at hand. We're going to be talking about unhealthy anger now, not such a pleasant subject. You know, I just wanted to start by saying that unhealthy anger seems to be more common for people with poor boundaries, people who are child abuse victims, although not necessarily pleasers. You know, so there are a number of things that can contribute to the buildup of unhealthy anger or the manifestation of it. And it's essentially, it's related, I would say it's characterized by power and control. It generally targets those perceived as less powerful. And so that's really at the center of it. And I'm sure you've seen that a lot in your work as a lawyer, Meredith.
I do see that a good amount. I mean, because I'm doing mediation and a good amount of divorce mediation, you know, I am seeing people who are breaking apart, and it definitely can be because there's unhealthy anger that's just gone on for too long in the relationship.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you know, there's different, I guess, degrees of unhealthy. So the unhealthy anger in terms of power and control and someone taking on the role of an abuser or a perpetrator versus someone who will blow up over things that is not, I think, fitting in that power and control grid, trying to take control over everything. But they have difficulty in terms of anger management.
Yeah. And part of, you know, part of that picture is that it's not present, it's not in the present tense. It has a past built-up origins. It really derives from a lot of old stuff, so there's a kind of simmering, stewing, brewing that helps to create it. And these past origins really create a lot of resentment, bitterness, and vengefulness. Unhealthy anger is really vengeful. It's not an attempt to connect or build understanding. It doesn't move toward the other person, but it moves away from the other person. And I've seen it in my work, the vengefulness aspect of it as manifesting with a lot of you statements, shaming, degrading language, blaming, demeaning character, intimidation. You know, it's a lot of that stuff. Can you hear me still?
Yes,
good,
I hear you.
I have somebody who called on call waiting, and that's not supposed to happen in the middle of this. So hopefully it doesn't.
Okay.
But you're still there. I hear you.
I am still here. I hear it cut out every now and then because of the call waiting, trying to get to you, but that's okay.
Okay.
So I wanted to add a balance on the unhealthy anger. I think that there are also the very passive-aggressive types of unhealthy anger. So what you're talking about are sort of the active-aggressive unhealthy anger types. But there are also those who are very angry, and they will punish you by not talking to you for a good period of time or by doing things to stab you in the back. So it's not direct, but certainly it's still that vengeful shaming and blaming that you were talking about. And I find that those can be even harder to address than the direct ones, because if you try to say to a person who's doing this, why are you doing this? I don't like when you do this. Then you can get, I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
A
disowning of it. That's part of the problem and part of what's so toxic about indirect anger, passive aggression, that people who lean into that stance don't own their own aggression for various reasons. It's not acceptable. They weren't allowed to express it in childhood, or it just feels too dangerous. So when you confront them, you know, what I think of is it's like grasping an air. They say, you know, what do you mean? What are you talking about? There's a disowning or a kind of denial of it. But the person on the receiving end, as I'm sure, you know, most people listening to this have been on the receiving end of indirect kind of backdoor anger, they're very aware that they've been slighted in some way and that they've been targeted in some way. And that
it can last forever.
Yeah.
Because the person never lets go of it. They never move through it.
Right. It just gets kind of acted out, and that's an important part of, you know, that's what happens in indirect or passive-aggressive anger. It gets acted out through behaviors that are retaliatory in some way, hurtful in some way, but with no engagement with the other person. So when you're on the receiving end of it, you know you've been slammed, but you can't, there's no conversation with the other person around it.
Right.
One of the things when, you know, if we get back to more overt unhealthy anger, it's often unregulated. It's often, it can be frequent. It can be extremely intense. It can involve screaming, throwing things, hitting things. That's the direct kind. And
yeah,
that certainly is the kind of anger that does not. It is not safe. And it's either physically or emotionally violent, and that's the kind of anger we all hear about. You know, when people get restraining orders, you know, there are wars between families or partners, but it's very unregulated.
It's very primitive. I mean, if you think about it, it really is that person is reacting as if there is a threat, and they really are completely in the reptilian brain. And
yes,
so
yes,
they're in full fight mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and full flight mode can be very violent, very unsafe, destroying objects, hitting, shoving. It's not only punching and a full-scale attack on the person, but it can be a lot of intimidation kinds of behaviors. Shoving, pushing, hovering over. I've talked to couples where, you know, one person stands over another person and just uses their physical presence to intimidate the other. So that's
right.
Another unregulated form of anger.
Right. There doesn't
and,
have to be physical contact for the person to feel unsafe. You know, there
that's
can
right.
have been verbal threats of violence that are sufficient to make the other person afraid. And
yeah,
so just knowing that there, when you're talking about a physically abusive relationship, all that it can take from the abuser is a look to the other person. And that person
yeah.
knows what that look means.
Yeah, yeah. And that look is a kind of power ploy. That's saying, I'm running things here. You're under my thumb, so you're going to behave. And it can be a look. What I've dealt with a lot in my work is blocking behaviors when the intimidator will not allow the other person to leave when they feel unsafe. And we'll talk in a minute about calming things down and timeouts. But they will block the exit, and that's another thing that feels unsafe. So the recipient of unhealthy anger feels trapped.
Right.
They can't leave.
They take the cell phone. They take the phone. They break the phone. Things
yeah.
that they can't get in contact with someone outside.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the kind that, you know, most people are aware of. When we get back to repressed anger, one of the things that's really unhealthy about it that I see so much in my work, and this is probably, it's men and women, but I see it more often in women because of the way the culture teaches women that, you know, if you're angry, you're a bitch. You know, a woman is not supposed to be angry. But it often leads to silence and withdrawal. It can set the stage for depression, various kinds of illness, because you hold anger in your body. It doesn't just disappear. Later rage and displacement onto the use of alcohol or drugs as an escape, where there's repressed anger. It gets acted out. It gets played out in very unsavory other ways. So it's not, there's no, you know, it's repressed. The person feeling it may not allow themselves to express it or feel it, but it certainly gets held in the body and expressed through the body and through often addictive kinds of things, gambling, retaliatory things, food, alcohol, over-drinking, overeating. So it's really unhealthy. It's unhealthy physically.
It is. It's holding on to the anger, whether you do it actively or passively like that, it's very unhealthy. I mean, there has to be a way to move through it and get rid of it.
Now, one thing,
and I think I would differentiate, though, too, between people who do it as a pattern in terms of power and control, and, again, who do it just as a means of dealing with that issue. So, you know, for someone that's dealing with their anger in a passive-aggressive way, then, I mean, that tends to lend itself more to power and control. You should see other power and control pieces coming up in the relationship. You may see that person alienates the other person from their friends or from their family. You can see that happening with someone who is, you know, dominant and is someone that people see as dominant, but also someone that is perceived as passive in the outside world can still be very controlling in a passive way at home.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that really does. That can
full spectrum.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Who's in charge of the money, and how is that handled? And is it something where there's been a joint decision that someone would be the one paying the bills, or is it that someone has decided that I will be the one to pay the bills, and I will give you an allowance, which I have determined is the only money that you will have, and then I
mm-hmm.
will take control of everything else.
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad you brought that up, because that often it can be an early warning sign about unhealthy anger. You know, it can be a marker that people might want to notice. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily lead to this other stuff, but it can definitely accompany the other stuff. One of the things I see also in my work a lot is the use of triangulation, or like a peanut gallery, as a method of a gang up, where one person will not just be speaking for themselves, but they will overwhelm the other person with the use of a peanut gallery. My family feels the same way. All my friends feel the same way about you. You know, you're nothing, you're useless. You know, an attempt to kind of demean and overpower the person and use other people, the peanut gallery, to kind of shore up their position. Do you see that as a mediator, or people more well-behaved in your office when they're doing that?
Well, what I tend to see is people that use the children that way. And
okay. So,
you know, the mom confides in the children about what dad has done and how bad it makes mom feel. Or the dad confides in the children about the fact that he has to pay child support and how much he has to pay, and that therefore he has no money, and so it's all mom's fault. Those are sort of the stereotypical things, but it goes both ways. It can definitely be dad confiding in the children about mom and how miserable she has made him over the years for whatever reason as well.
Changing the power dynamic, it's like augmenting your own position by, you know, getting more people on your side, supposedly, and to diminish the other person and sort of isolate them. So it's bad news. Now, Meredith,
also
I thought...
seeing the other person as the enemy. And so, you know, I'll have people say, well, the children need to know. They have a right to know what that other parent has done. They have a right to know that this parent is, you know, bad, basically. And really it's that the parent that feels the need to tell them needs to show that I am good.
So, you know, that's a that often accompanies this whole scene. Now, what I thought in the remaining time, what we might want to do, Meredith, is talk a little bit about calming things down, a few strategies to when things are ramping up, some tips for to help people calm things back down and get them to a place that feels more manageable. And one of the things I do with couples that I teach couples to do is to have an agreement with each other about when either person begins to feel that something is moving toward too uncomfortable a place, that we're ramping up, we're getting too reactive, we're starting to yell at each other, we're getting really nasty, it's not good, to agree that either person can call a yellow light. So that's kind of a warning light, and just, you know, just indicate yellow light, all right? So that's kind of a way of saying, this is getting out of control, I'm not feeling comfortable, let's interrupt this sequence and let's move into something else. Let's each be more mindful about how we're talking to each other. And then if things are feeling... It doesn't change things, and things continue to ramp up, that either person can call a red light. And the person would ideally speak for themselves and say, I'm not feeling comfortable with what's happening here. Red light. I need a timeout. I need a timeout. And not you need a timeout, but I need a timeout because I don't like what's happening here. And that there's an agreement on the front end, before you're in the problem, that when either person calls a timeout, that you take a timeout for about 15, 20 minutes, and during that time, what you're doing is you're calming down your reptilian brain, basically. So, and the part of the way you do that is you do deep breathing, 4 seconds in through your nose, 8 seconds out through your mouth. You do that for a period of time. What that does is it stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which calms down the stress response. And you also, after you've done that for a while, you can count backwards by twos from 100. And what that does is it refocuses the brain. You're pulling the brain essentially out of your reptilian brain, and you're pulling it into the whole prefrontal cortex, which is the mature part of the brain that knows judgment, perspective, language. It's not the primitive brain, but it requires you're basically calming down the triggered brain and pulling yourself into a more reasonable place. And it takes about 15, 20 minutes for you to do that. And then after that timeout, you then can go back to whatever you were talking about, hopefully, ideally, with more perspective and more calm. Now, have you ever tried that or used that with any clients you've worked with?
I have not. I like the counting backwards because it does. It automatically forces you to go up into that higher part of yourself and get away from what's triggering you. I like
to refocus.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it refocuses the brain. It's a kind of meditative strategy. It focuses you onto something neutral, and calms down the amygdala, and the reptilian brain, and the combination of that and the deep breathing is really helpful.
I think it can be helpful too to just get out and get some exercise. Because it, really, if you're triggered, your body is flooded with chemicals that are for fight, flight, or freeze. So
yes.
Go get rid of some of those chemicals. Do exactly what your body is telling you to do, aside from, you know, getting into a fight with someone. But go for a walk. Go for a run. You know, do some Tai Bo. Pretend to hit someone in terms of doing Tai Bo as opposed to pretending to hit someone and doing it as a means of power and control. But do things to get those chemicals released because they're
the
there.
The two of you
would
need to have an agreement on the front end that if either one of you felt that things were moving in a toxic direction and things were getting too heated, that either one could call a timeout. So either one could say, you know what, I think I need to get out and walk. I need to go for a little drive. If you have that agreement on the front end, then the other person is not going to feel like, where the heck are you going? You're abandoning me. How could you? How dare you? It's a pre-agreement.
It is. And it's also recognizing what each of you need. And so if you know that your partner has a pattern of going for a walk in the midst of things and coming back, then probably your partner needs that walk. So don't try to force it and say, oh, no, you can't go for a walk. That usually ends badly, right, when you try to say to someone, no, you need to stay here and talk this through with me. You can't go anywhere. That doesn't usually go very well.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I've worked with so many clients over the years who entertain the old myth, don't go to bed mad. Really hash it out until it's all hashed out. And what I say to people is that we now know, you know, brain research has indicated that when you are activated and you are in your ancient brain, and the more tired you are, the more toxic things are going to get. So sometimes you might need to go to bed mad and give yourself a break, the break of sleep, and revisit it in the morning or the next day when you're rested and you have a little bit more perspective.
I think some of us are better able to sleep that way than others. So I will tell you that I can have an argument with my husband and he can go right to sleep without it being resolved. And I don't. I stew. So I appreciate that, but I'm really, it does not make for good sleep for me.
Well, it's hard. It's hard to do that, but I think you would sleep better if the two of you had an agreement that we won't talk about it tonight, but we're going to put it back on the table as soon as we can in a timely way. We're not going to just take it off the table. That's a key part of that timeout, that there's an agreement. We will get back to it so that we will move towards some kind of resolution.
I might not be that highly evolved, Susan.
Yeah.
It might not be.
Something to work on, Meredith. Yeah, because you have to both feel like you have the energy and the wherewithal to be in the exchange. And if it's feeling unsafe to one person, then it's not good. And if you have an agreement that if one person is not feeling, if one person is feeling maxed out, overwhelmed, then we need to call some kind of a timeout. And maybe for the two of you, just a timeout when you're tired instead of trying to sleep the whole night. Just saying, let's take 15, 20 minutes and take a little walk outside, get some fresh air, do some deep breathing, count backwards from 100 by twos. You know, that might help.
I do.
Anyway,
like
Meredith.
The
what?
Yeah. I like the yellow light. And I like what you had talked about in terms of, you know, saying I need a break. I have had the discussion with people before about saying I need a break, and they'll say to me, but what if it's not that I need the break? What if the other person needs the break? I say, well, if you see them escalating, it's still your decision whether or not you want to be a part of it. And if you are the one saying that there needs to be a break here, then you are the one who needs the break. And it is never going to go well if you say to the other person, we need to stop because you need a break. That doesn't work well.
No, it doesn't, because the other person is likely to say, what the heck are you talking about? Don't tell me
exactly
what I need.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good. Anyway, we're out of time. We need to stop. I want to thank you, Meredith, for joining me for this conversation. We both are very familiar with conflict in our work, and in, you know, we have it in our personal life also, obviously, so we know about this. And I would say to anybody who wants and needs to deal with conflict more directly, Meredith is the conflict coach. It's her world. I don't know how you can stand it, Meredith, but it's what you do.
You do couples counseling. I think that you know it as well, Susan.
I do, but I don't know. It's not, I don't know that conflict is as pervasive in my work. Yeah, it's there. It's clearly there, but there's lots of other things. I mean, but what I was saying is that I think if anybody wants to know how to deal with conflict more effectively and develop more tools, contact Meredith at her private practice, Resolution, in Elliott, Maine, and the number is 207-439-4267. Or come to our couples retreat on Star Island in June, because one of the things we will be dealing with is communication, conflict, and connection. They're all the big three C's. They're all related. I want to thank you listeners for joining us, and to let you know that my next episode will be Wednesday, May 14th. I'm a little out of sequence because we missed some shows because of all these ridiculous glitches on Blog Talk Radio, but it's May 14th at 8:30 p.m. So take care and have a good, tomorrow's May 1st, so have a good beginning of spring. And take care to you, Meredith.
Thank you so much, Susan. I always enjoy doing this with you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.